Good morning, everyone. This is my first time speaking up here at this church, so I don't know how long it'll go. Depends, and if it goes short, we'll have Shelly do some more worship songs. So I think the question for today is about what it means to flourish and prosper, especially in the church setting. So I think for one sense, you know, like, you can flourish something and make it very impressive. But in the same way, you know, it shows that you're, like, vibrant, you're alive, you're able to do things that are successful. In fact, you know, if you do this in an alley in the city, people will actually give you money. So, you know, you think about that, and I think that, you know, getting money, that's pretty prosperous. But one of the bigger questions is, like, how about the Bible? What does the Bible talk about that says that we are to prosper and thrive? So I think for this, it comes to a very big idea, and it's this general question. If it's not God, who is it? If it's not God, who does our help come from? Who gives us substance? Who gives us reasons to live or to do things? And I think that's a pretty big idea. And, you know, for the coders out there, you know, you put it as an if statement. But this is the kind of idea for what does it mean to have purpose? Where should our purpose come from? And as Christians who believe in God, our answer should be, you know, our purpose should come from God and what He dictates as this thing. So I think overall, this is some raw, this is just like raw information. This is like almost a philosophical, very rigorous mathematical coding argument. But the thing that Pastor gave is, he was like, last week, he was like, Tim, I want you to preach on a psalm. And I was like, you know, psalm, that's like very poetic, and that's not my field of study. It has a lot of metaphors and stuff. Like, you know, the previous line, I'm like, I think more like that. My upbringing and my years of study all think like that. But Psalms is much more difficult because it's poetry, and I can't quite wrap my mind around kind of the argument, like, you know, what it's trying to get at. There's so many different, like, images or patterns that may or may not make sense. And I think that's why Psalms, like, initially is kind of, it's one of the harder places I go to in the Bible. Statistically, though, Psalms is the most average part of the Bible in all senses of the word. But that whole idea is, it's such a pervasive part of the Bible. Why is there so much poetry in it? And there's a couple of good answers for it. You know, the information presented, you know, like, what does it mean to prosper? Oh, you follow God. That's very easy. But the way that you go about it is clear in some sense, but it doesn't strike at some of the deeper issues, or you don't envision it as well if it's not in the poetic sense. And I think one of them is it helps us understand harder concepts that go beyond. And one of the ways is God often speaks in poetry. He can't speak exactly what He's doing, because to us that would be very incomprehensible. But He speaks in much more poetic language so that we can see some of the things that He's saying, getting a sense of it, but still not being able to fully capture it. And I think that's how poetry works. And so with the Psalms, we have a part of we have a bit of poetry where we're looking into it, and we're asking ourselves, how do we prosper? So in Psalms 1, this is one the pastor gave me. So he either thoughtfully or unthoughtfully chose out of the 150. He gave me the first one. So that's the whole space, but he gave me Psalm 1. And I think we're going to read Psalms 1, see some of the aspects of it that we've seen above, where it's like, how do we prosper? And we'll see how Psalms 1 tackles it, not only from a logical perspective, but also from a poetic perspective. So Psalms 1 is quite tight. It fits on one slide, and I'll read it. Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of scoffers, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night. He is like a tree planted by streams of water that yields its fruit in season, and its leaf does not wither. In all that he does, he prospers. The wicked are not so, but are like chaff that the wind drives away. Therefore, the wicked will not stand in the judgment, nor the sinners in the congregation of the righteous. For the Lord knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will perish. All right, I'm going to pray. Dear God, thank you for this time that we get to gather to hear about your word and to hear about what it has to say. As we look deeply into Psalm 1, understanding the imagery that you've given here, helping to teach us these aspects of what it has in store for how we should behave in our lives. God, I pray for myself that I may be a vessel for you, that I may rightly divide the word and accurately identify things that can draw close to people's hearts, and that you will be working through this, help open our hearts and spirits to receive this message, Lord, and help me to be honest about what you have to say, and may your text really reveal itself to us through this time. In Jesus' name I pray, amen. So Psalms 1 is, just a couple verses to analyze. Like I said, it fits on one slide. But going through it, we see some distinction. There is an aspect of the blessed person and then the aspect of the wicked people. So as we go through the first verse, we see that there is a man, and this is the good person. What does he do? He walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of scoffers. These are three aspects of life that, someone can interact with other people. You're walking with them, you stand with them, you sit with them. And the blessed man says, I want to have none of that. I want to stay away. And I think one idea is each of these verbs can be seen, can be understood, if there's like tabling on campus and someone has a sign up, the people seated there are very invested in it. The people standing maybe, it's like, oh, I'm kind of interested in what you have to say. And the people walking by, I might just be on my way to class. But as it goes through, this blessed man, he doesn't sit with them. He doesn't like that. He doesn't even want to stand near them. And he doesn't even want to walk by them. These are three aspects where he knows the wicked, he knows the sinners, and he knows the scoffers, and he's like, I don't want anything to do with these group of people. So I think that's what the blessed man does. At least the things that he doesn't do. He wants to stay away from these groups. But instead, what does he do? Verse 2 has it. His delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night. And I think this is like, I'm not spending my time over there in that group. I'm spending my time somewhere else, and that is in the law of the Lord. One of them, which is hard, is delighting in the law of the Lord, reading the Bible and like smiling and joyful. It's like, oh, this is exciting stuff. Like, I'm so happy to be doing this. He really enjoys this, and he makes this a large part of his life because he meditates day and night. And meditation in the sense that he's thinking about it, he's using it, it's in his lifestyle. That is the way that he spends his time. And I think this is actually very pervasive to the way that he lives his life. It's like, I'm thinking about, I'm thinking about this, and I enjoy this too. It's not like homework. It's like, yeah, I meditate on my homework, but I sure don't delight in it. So that's why it's very different. Someone who is in the Word, in the law, understands it very well because he's constantly looking through it, seeing it from different perspectives, and is joyful and happy about it. It's like, yes, I get to do this stuff. This is pretty interesting. So the righteous people, you know, I think this is what the first part, the first thing I said, like, if not God, then what? If not, we should be the ones who ask ourselves, like, are we the ones replacing God with walking with sinners, being with scoffers? Instead, we need to look to God to delight in the law. And I think that's a bit of the imagery right there, where we're focused more on the law and how it is to understand and live our life through that. But what does that do for us from verse 2? We get to see a little more of that in verse 3. He is like a tree planted by streams of water that yields its fruit in season, and its leaf does not wither. And all that he does, he prospers. I think 3 has a lot more to say about what can happen if you live a life in verse 2. A tree is a, you know, pretty strong organism. It gets pretty big and it's pretty solid and stuff. But you ask yourself, how does a tree get big? I think that's, you know, it's not easy to identify. But a tree accumulates things from around it to add to itself. That's how it grows big. And one of them, it's planted by streams of water. Water is one of the key components for growth. So because it's planted near water, it has a source for it to grow. Compared to verse 2 seems like this person is planted. He's not planted by water, you know, he's a person. But he's planted in the law of the Lord. He's sitting in it and dwelling in it, and that's how he's accumulating so that he can be a righteous person. So I think that's one of them. He's planted by streams of water. He's deep in it. He's growing from that. And what happens when you are planted by streams of water? You yield fruit. You are fruitful. So you create things that are useful to other people. Fruit is, I guess, seeds that can help make more trees, and it tastes good and stuff. For other people, I'm allergic, but... And the other one is its leaf does not decay. Leaves, you know, are how it does the photosynthesis, it grows. And if it doesn't decay, it means that it is strong and it is vibrant and is able to do its processes. You know, a decaying tree, it's going to cut off its leaf first because it's going to sense that it doesn't need it. So I think 3 has a lot more of the imagery of what it means to dwell in the law of the Lord. You're a tree, you're planted, you draw up all of these nutrients from the water, from the air. And the reason why you can draw up these things that make you grow is because you draw up things from the law of the Lord. And the last thing, I think it makes it more complete, and all he does is prospers. You know, a fruitful tree, it's growing, it's strong, it's taking up water and air. It's good. I mean, you contrast that to trees that aren't planted by water, that are sometimes in people's houses that people forget to water them, and it dies. Leaves definitely wither. They don't grow, no fruit, and it's not very prosperous. So I think that's the one. This is the good verse in verse 3. This is the one where we actually see, hey, this lifestyle can be very fruitful and growing, and you're very vibrant and prosperous, and all that he does, he prospers. You're prosperous when the time comes because you are rooted in the law of the Lord. To the other side, what happens if you're not rooted in the law of the Lord? Again, verse 4. Oh, wicked are not so, but are like chaff that the wind drives away. Now, I think for me, like, I don't really. It's kind of like what is chaff? It's not a very common thing that we see around. And I think, one of the aspects of Christian life is you're not only a good Christian, but you're also a little bit of a you're a passable farmer. So you have to know what chaff looks like. So this is an image of chaff and grain. You have your main grain right there. That's like kind of the wheat stuff that you have. You have to beat you beat the stuff out, and then you're left with this stuff. This is the grain seeds that you want. I wanna eat that. That's why I make like, bread out of. But this stuff is kind of the shell of the grain. That's the chaff. And I mean, that's like some flaky stuff. It's actually pretty low in nutrition, so you don't want that. And I think the best way I could kind of describe this is like it's almost like eating like sawdust. It's like flaky, it's like crumbly and cracks and stuff. And I haven't eaten it, but I bet it doesn't taste good. But this is the idea of chaff. It's like this is stuff that's low in nutrition, that kind of gets in the way of the nutrition as well, and it's not good for you. So I need to get rid of it. So I think here it's like how do farmers get rid of it? Like here in this situation, it's like, oh yeah, you could just pick it out, like that looks like about like 10 and 10. Like I can sort that. But once you get to bigger levels, it's a lot harder to envision like, okay, which one's a grain and which one is a chaff? Which one's just a husk? And just from this, from optically, when I look at it, I'm like, I can't really tell. Maybe after an hour you can get through this. But from the industrial sense, like, that's a lot harder to get through. Like, there's no way that you can sort through this by hand and, like, pick out and feel which one is chaff and which one's not. So then the technique is called winnowing, which is not knowing how it's not knowing how to win, which some people may need. But winnowing is the technique for separating chaff from grain, and it is like Psalms 1, and it uses the wind. Winnowing kind of has the word wind. That's what they said the root was, but it looks like this. They pour it out from on top. It hits the grain is more solid, so it goes down, and the chaff gets drawn up by the air and it flies away. So, this is literally a person, and the chaff is the stuff that flies further, and the grain is the one that hits the ground first. So I think that's what is supposed to look like. That's how you separate these things. Here's another image of what it looks like. I think this is with a basket. Well, I don't know, like some pan thing or something. But you shake it, you knock it up, and you create a little bit of wind, a little draft, in order for the chaff to is more easily able to separate from it. But the grain is more likely to stay in place. So you kind of do this action a bunch. I watched some videos about it. And then as you keep doing it, the lighter things will always fly away, and the more denser things will remain in. And that's the stuff you want to retain. And I'm like, yeah, this is the stuff I studied, like separation criteria and how you distinguish between using different characteristics of your materials, chemicals, boiling points. So yeah, this is how useful it is. So you can envision now a little bit of what it is. In verse 3, we had the idea of the tree planted. Verse 4, we have the idea of the chaff that the wind blows away. It just goes like that. I literally, she literally shakes it and then it goes away. And I think there have been technological advancements for winnowing, like this. But I think this one also has some aspect. The grain is this part that sits close, and then you have the chaff that's a lot further out. They all kind of collect into those circumstances. So that's some of the technological advancements, I'm sure. But then I think to look at it a little more deeper, you have to. It's like, why does one why does one fall further and why does one fall closer? And I have skills for that too. Using diagrams, you know, if you have a fan on a particle, there's two basic forces that push the particle. You have one away from the fan and one that draws it down. Does anyone know what the left one is? How about the down one? Gravity. It's the weight. The other one is called drag. It's dragged by the wind. The airflow takes it. So I think when you combine the two forces, you get an overall force, and it points, you can see, like, I generally think it goes down and away because you have the wind and the gravity draws it down. And then here's the person, you know, you have some gravity and you have some wind. But I think with the grain, it's different. There's a lot more weight on it, and it draws it straight down compared to how much it drags. So that's why it comes much sharper down and hits the ground close to you as opposed to the chaff, which is much lighter. You know, you can see it in the picture. It's much lighter. It's kind of like wide, so it catches the air better, and there's a lot more drag. So that's why in the picture you see it, the chaff drags and flies away to the top right. I mean, to the right. So the big question is, what about this dictates which direction you go? And it's about how much weight do you have versus how much you are dragged. In order to be the solid grain with high nutrition, you need to have a lot of weight and very little drag. If you want to go away, you get dragged a lot without much weight. And I think from the biblical, from the physical sense, these physics words, they actually match a little bit with what we should expect from our lives. We want to have a lot of weightiness to what we're doing. The idea of a planted tree has a lot of weight. It's drawn down to the ground. And the other one is dragged. Are we dragged away from the place that we should be? We want to have very little drag. Otherwise, we're going to get dragged by the ideas of the world. You know, get more money, have more influence, you know, be cool, or, you know, play these games or whatever. Those are the kind of things that drag us. Like, are we weighty and sitting where we are? And verse 2 talks about how we should be planted in the Word, delighting in it, meditating in it day and night. That's the weight. That's the thing that draws us down versus how much are we dragged away. So I think one big aspect is, how do we come down on this? What is our force balance to say what angle we actually end up at? Right? So I think that is how we can understand chaff a little bit to see what kind of lifestyle we end up living. So we'll go to the last, the finishing part. We have verse 4. The wicked are not so, but are like chaff that the wind drives away. I think we now have a little bit of better imagery of, like, this thing is getting caught in the wind and it's going away. There's no basis for it. It's not rooted in anything. It just kind of goes to and from. And I think the best way you see this is you see this in thing people's, like, have fads and stuff, or get excited about things, or there's new some cultural phenomena or whatever. It just, like, shifts, and then you shift some other way, and then there's something new to shift about. So that's the idea of chaff. Wicked are drawn like chaff. They kind of move back and forth between these things. The wicked will not stand in judgment, nor the sinners in the congregation of the righteous. For the Lord knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will perish. And I think these are verses that further describe what it means to leave. You're not a part of this area anymore. I think verse 5 also matches a little bit with verse 1. You're not going to stand, you know. In verse 1, we talked about you're not people who stand with sinners. Well, you're not going to stand in righteousness. You're gone. And in the congregation, that's the place where you sit. It's like, you don't want to be here. You're not here either. So I think that 5 and 1 actually match a little bit. Because you have these ideas of, you know, it's not here. You guys wanted to be over there. All right, you guys can go over there. And then it's shifted away in verse 5. But I think if you envision this, God has a way to drive away these wicked people. Because they're like the chaff. They don't have the true root in the streams of water. They're not that tree. And so that's why they're pushed around in a way. So I think you see, I'll go through verse 4, 5, and 6 again. The wicked are not so. They are like chaff that the wind drives away. It goes away. Therefore, the wicked will not stand in judgment. Why? Because it has gone away like the chaff. Nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. They can't be in this area either. For the Lord knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will perish. It's not, I'm done with that, but it's not in this area. It has been, God will drive them out. And I think that imagery is very useful to think about, like, how do we have this stuff? How do we maintain our lives? Are we kind of like that chaff that goes here and there? And I think that's why this first verse of Psalms is very useful. Asking ourselves, like, how grounded in the law are you? Do you delight in it? Are you drawn by, like the wicked, going to and from some idea to another? And then, because if you are, you will get blown away. You will not be able to stand with the Lord. So, you know, overall, I think that's a pretty tight message on what it means to be prosperous. And I think it answers our question kind of from a different perspective. You know, from the initial one, we're like, oh yeah, we gotta remain in God. But now we see exactly why we remain in God. We need to have that weightiness in Him. We also need to restrict ourselves from being dragged away too much. So that is Psalms 1. But I think overall, you know, these are some pretty hard things to do. You know, at the beginning, blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked. Maybe I've walked with the wicked somehow. Maybe I've stood with sinners or sat in the seat of scoffers, especially when scoffing at how I should have put an exclamation mark and equal sign there, and I missed the colon at the end of the if statement. Am I scoffing at these things when I look at this and I'm like, yeah, you know, I think many of us acknowledge that we have kind of scoffed a little bit about different aspects of life. We have acted wickedly, and we are drawn by the wind sometimes to other things that are more interesting in life. How are we to delight in the law of the Lord? It's really large, it's really thick, it's hard. And it really makes me think that planting myself near the stream, growing in fruitfulness, is not an easy task. And how am I to know if my actions are able to maintain myself in that grain pile? Is my weightiness enough? Is my drag small enough so that I may reside with that nutritious pile that belongs to the Lord and doesn't get blown away? And I think that's a really good question, because I don't think anyone can answer the first couple of questions saying that they truly have done all these things. Look at me. But I think that's the point of this part. You know, we see what we should be and what we want to do, what we like, you know, as Christians, we kind of want to do this, but we're not able to meet all these standards. Luckily, or unfortunately, I'd say that, yeah, I guess you can't meet all these standards. But fortunately, you don't have to meet all these standards. Because in the last section, how are we able to meet these standards? Hebrews 4:14-16. Since we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold fast to our confession, for we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weakness, but one who has in every respect been tempted as we are, yet without sin. Let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace, that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in times of need. This part shows that Jesus is the one who has also gone through this. He's also gone through a lot of wind and trials, but he's the one who's been successfully able to be planted. I think from the Gospels, we see that. The reason why we don't have to meet that same extreme standard of like constantly delighting, constantly joying, rejecting all in wickedness, I think we've been successful in showing that we have not been able to do that. But we have Jesus who is able to do that. So the big message is, in Psalms 1 also brings up the high view of what it means to be holy. And then we look and see, it's like, I want to be like that. I want to be like that tree. I want to be planted in and delighting. I don't want to be driven. I don't want to be dragged by the wind. How am I to do that? Hebrews 4 says we have Jesus who has done that and that we can hold fast to in order to meet with that. So with that, I think I'll close to share about Psalm 1. Dear God, thank you for this time that you've been able to bless us with Psalm 1. We see how great you are and how you give us images of the ways that you're sorting the people and the ways that you expect us to be. I thank you for giving us so many ways that we can interact with you. But we know that we're not able to do everything. But you've given Jesus, your Son, to be able to help us in these times, who has been through the same situations we have and more. That he has been able to empathize with us, and you give us the opportunity to cling to him. So that we may, that will help us in these times of trial and sin. But not only that, you've had him take on the responsibility that we may cast our burdens on him, and he's the one who takes it away, Lord. I thank you for this time that we get to really reflect and see the goodness of you and how perfect and holy your word is. So take this time, take each of us listening today, that we may apply it to our lives. Apply the devotion and meditation of the word to avoid wickedness, but also to look to you for our help. In Jesus' name, pray. Amen.